The instructresses taught them how to dab a tiny amount of the material, the girls always called the radium the material, into their crucibles, like a fine smoke in the air, and then mix the paint carefully. Even the softest stirring, however, left most women with splashes on their bare hands. Then, once the paint was mixed, they instructed them to lip point. She told me to watch her and imitate her, Catherine remembered of her training. As surely as night follows day, Grace and Catherine and Irene followed the instructions. They put the brush to their lips, dipped it in the radium, and painted the dials. It was a lip-dip paint routine. All the girls copied each other, mirror images that lipped and dipped and painted all day long. They soon found the radium hardened on their brushes. A second crucible was supplied, ostensibly for cleaning the bristles, but the water was changed only once a day and soon became cloudy. It didn't so much clean as spread the bristles, which some workers found a hindrance. They simply used their mouths to dampen the brush instead. Others, however, always used the water. "I know I done it," one said, "because I couldn't stand that gritty taste in my mouth." The taste of the paint was a source of debate. It didn't taste funny, Grace observed. It didn't have any taste. Yet some ate the paint, specifically because they liked it. Another new worker tasting the magic element that summer was 16-year-old Edna Bowles. "Here is a person," Popular Science later wrote of her, "blessed from birth with a sunny disposition." She was taller than many of her co-workers, though still only 5'5", and had an innate elegance about her. She was nicknamed the Dresden Doll because of her beautiful golden hair and fair colouring. She also had perfect teeth and, perhaps as a result, a beaming smile. Over time, she became close to the forelady, Miss Rooney, who described her as a very nice type of girl, very clean-living type of very good family. Edna's passion was music, and she was also devoutly religious. She joined in July, at a time when production was rocketing due to wartime demand. That summer, the plant was a ferment of activity. "The place was a madhouse," one worker exclaimed. The girls were already doing overtime to keep up with demand, working 7 days a week. Now the studio started operating night and day. The dial painters glowed even brighter from the radium against the dark windows, a workshop of shining spirits labouring through the night. Though the pace was demanding, the setup was in many ways fun for the women, who revelled in the drama of the long shifts painting dials for their country. The majority were teenagers, merry, giggling girls, and they found time for the odd bit of fun. One favourite game was to scratch their name and address into a watch, a message for the soldier who would wear it. Sometimes he would respond with a note. New girls were joining all the time, which made the job even more sociable. In Newark, perhaps 70 women had worked in the studio. During the war, that number more than tripled. The girls now sat crammed in on both sides of the desks, only a few feet apart. Hazel Vincent was among them. Like Catherine Sharp, she came from Newark. She had an oval face with a button nose and fair hair that she set in the latest styles. Another new worker was 21-year-old Albina Maggia, the daughter of an Italian immigrant who came from a family of 7 girls. She was the third. She was a somewhat round and diminutive woman of only 4'8", with classic Italian dark hair and eyes. She was pleased to get back into the world of work. As the eldest unmarried daughter, she'd quit her hat-trimming job to nurse her mother, who died the year before. But she discovered she was not the fastest dial painter. She found the brushes very clumsy, and painted only a tray and a half a day. Nonetheless, she tried as hard as she could, later remarking, "I always did my best for that company."